Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Mac, and you're listening to Mac's Musings. My guest tonight is Dave Castelloni, a guest that has been on several of my shows. So we are welcoming him back tonight, and this thing should be dialing him as I speak, which, yes, I hear it, so that's good. And he should be
Hello.
Ready to answer. Hello, Dave. This is Mac.
Hi there, Mac. How are you?
Oh, just peachy. And how are you?
I'm doing well. I just got over the flu a couple weeks ago, so it's my voice might be a little hoarse, but other than that, I'm A-OK.
Oh, yeah, you do sound a little hoarse, poor thing. Well,
yeah, I'm
I know.
Very fine.
Go ahead. I'm
no,
sorry,
I'm,
go ahead.
I'm good, though.
Oh, okay.
That was it.
Well, I know you know this, but I just want to remind you that we're on the air live. So, you know, whatever happens, happens. So for anybody that may not know who you are, or they may need like a little remembrance to help them remember, why don't you give like a little biography about yourself?
Okay, very well. I will do that. So I basically started acting in the late 80s, very late 80s and early 90s with Wave Productions, which was an independent shot on video movie company right in my county. And I did like well over 100 titles for them. Some of them are movies that were never distributed. Some of them, a good percentage of them were what they would call custom-made movies, where people would send them scripts and pay them to produce their movies, basically, you know, a list of, you know, a certain type of client, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what led. I had always planned on and dreamed of making my own movies. I did make Super 8 movies when I was a teenager with my friends in the neighborhood, so I got the movie-making bug pretty early on. So I always had that in the back of my mind. If I started work with these guys, maybe I'd be able to network with some people and get some people together to make my own film. So pretty much what I did while I was working with Wave, you know, I enlisted some people and some who actually volunteered to help me, you know, and then I did my first feature with a lot of the help of one of the Wave producer Sal Longo, who's no longer with the company. He kind of volunteered to help me do Love is a Stranger, the original movie. That was the movie that started Sharky Video, basically, and that's when I, you know, started the Sharky Video label with that production back in 1994. And ever since then, it's been like, you know, that was one after another, you know, all through the 90s and early 2000s. And then, you know, as you might remember, I had a long hiatus where I did not do anything for years.
Yeah.
Until I guess around 2017, you know, I was kind of brought back into the industry kind of by accident, and here I am doing stuff again.
Well, I'm glad to hear about that, because you are an excellent filmmaker and you're a pretty decent actor too.
Well, I appreciate that. I like to think I've grown through the years, but thank you so much.
Well, you know what? Everybody does. No matter what it is that they do, if you do it enough, you get better at it. And especially if it's something that you're passionate about, which you are passionate about filmmaking, because there are famous actors that I didn't necessarily care for them. And I'll say one, and hopefully I won't get any hate from his fans or from him, but I can't think of his name, of course, because I wanted to talk about him. Now I remember. Richard Gere. Okay, I never cared that much. Yeah, I never really cared that much for him. Older, he got to be a pretty decent actor. And there was I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just agreeing with you. Yeah, I kind of agree with what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, all I was going to say was that he was in this movie, and right now the name escapes me, and it doesn't really matter. But he made this movie with, I think it was Diane Lane, and he was her. He was playing her husband, and his acting in this film was. In just this film, not in any ones before that or after that, but he was pretty close, not quite there, but he was pretty close to Humphrey Bogart material.
Oh.
Yeah. It pretty
I don't know
pretty
if I
close.
Saw that.
Hmm. Yeah, it was, I think it was called Unfaithful. I'm pretty sure that's it, because she was being unfaithful. And I think
okay.
it was a... yeah, I think it was A. Martinez that was playing the guy that she was messing around with. And
oh,
what
I see.
Made him, yeah, what made him close to the quality of Humphrey Bogart, it specifically in, you know, in my mind and lots of other people's minds too, in the, I don't know if you've seen it because many people have never seen any Bogie movies, but Treasure of Sierra Madre, have you, no, not that one, I'm sorry, no, yeah, that's the right one. Treasure of the Sierra Madre. Have you seen that?
I am familiar with it, but I never remember sitting through it, honestly. I don't think I ever actually saw it.
Oh, okay. Well, if you get a chance, watch it, because it like is a tremendous showcase of Humphrey Bogart's phenomenal acting talent, because they're like digging for gold and stuff, him and these two other guys. To help protect themselves and their gold, they decide to work together, the three of them. And then they all start getting, you know, paranoid. Oh, this one's trying to steal my gold. That one's trying to steal my gold. So they decide that they're going to put it somewhere where the other people don't know it's at, and then they'll each have their own gold, and nobody knows where anybody else's gold is at. Well, everybody was okay with that for a while. But then Humphrey Bogart, you didn't even see it coming. He just like all of a sudden started like cracking up, and he was talking to himself, and even that didn't really make you think that he was nuts, because lots of people talk to themselves. It doesn't mean they're nuts.
Right.
But he just gradually went downhill, and you almost didn't even notice it until he was already so far gone that he was gone in his head.
Wow.
And
okay.
That's what happened in that movie with Richard Gere, because he was so mad that his wife was unfaithful. And so he decided to go, I won't tell too much about it because I don't want to ruin it for anybody that's going to watch it, because I'm talking about how good it is. So he goes to the guy's apartment, and he pretty much, you know, lets him know that he knows what's going on. And then some bad stuff happens, and it happens so quick that you never saw it coming. What happens, I shouldn't say you never saw it coming. You kind of thought maybe something was going to happen, but you didn't necessarily think it was going to be what did happen. And it was all because he, like, lost his marbles, because he was so in love with his wife and so messed up because she was unfaithful to him. And he just, like, started going downhill in his mind. And his acting was really great in that movie. So I only brought that one up because I was just saying, even actors that have been famous their whole lives, it doesn't necessarily mean they're good actors, but even they will get better.
Yeah.
The more movies.
That's true. I agree.
Yeah, the more movies they make, the better they're going to get. So now that I talk for a while, but one reason why I did that is because I knew you had a cold even before you told me, because you told me earlier. So I want to help save your voice a little bit.
Thank you. Yes, I appreciate that. Yeah, so feel free to jump in and give me breaks if you hear me losing my voice or struggling. Because, you know, I will say, like, if I'm talking, like, a lot, or if I'm talking too strong, if that makes any sense, it might lead to like a coughing, you know, situation. So I'm trying to like keep it low key, you know, trying to keep a little bit monotone with my voice. So I'm trying not to get too excited.
Well, yeah,
it's
I understand
hard not to get
that.
Excited.
I get that. I actually understand it on a different level because I don't have a cold right now or anything, but my voice is a little bit raspy at the moment too, but it's mainly because of my asthma, and I have allergies as well, so my nose gets stopped up real easy from
I'm
all
sure
my
this
allergies.
Time of the year is, especially this time of the year, right, when everything's blooming.
Yeah, I get emails from this place that talks about, you know, allergens and stuff, and because they're giving you warnings if the pollen count is high and things like that. And so the one that I got today, the pollen count was at, now their scale that they use is 0 to 12. So if you're over 11, that's pretty freaking high. And it was like 11.1 or something like that. So, yeah, that's pretty high.
Wow.
And like, no wonder. So one thing that I did want to have you talk about for just, you know, a little bit, tell everybody what state you lived in before you moved to my state of Ohio, and then also tell them what that was like as you were moving and how you liked the state so far.
Well, I love it. You know, I'm still very new here, but I love, you know, there's so many things I want to do that I haven't had time to do. I came from South Jersey. You know, Jersey was okay, but I got tired of it. And, you know, the thing I probably miss or will miss about Jersey is the Jersey Shore. We live pretty close to, you know, places like Ocean City and Wildwood, and I grew up going to those places. So, you know, there's always going to be fond memories of going to the Jersey Shore. Mm-hmm. That's probably the only thing I'll miss about the state, other than my friends and family, of course. I miss them. But, yeah, the cost of living is so expensive in Jersey. Like, the farther north you go, the more expensive it gets. And I was lucky that I was in South Jersey, but even there, I mean, just the taxes are astronomical. And I knew if I stayed there, I would never be able to retire. And at least now I have hope of retiring one day because I'm in Ohio. The cost of living is so much cheaper. You know, I got a house that I never would have been able to afford on my own if I had stayed in Jersey. And just everything is, like, cheaper here. The only thing I'm not seeing a difference on is food basically is about the same prices of food, but everything else has been so much cheaper.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that you're liking it, because I love my state. I've lived in other states, and, you know, they were okay, but, I'd rather live here, even with the crazy weather we have. I know almost all the states have this saying, if you don't like the weather, stay for a couple minutes. But for most of the states that use that, it's not even really accurate. But here it is. Because there have been times when I go out to make a short tour, you know, like just to go there and get like a loaf of bread and then come back, which is obviously less than an hour. I've gone out without a coat and came back with a coat because that's how much it went down, the temperature. And then I also have had the opposite happen, where I leave with a coat and then I come back without the coat because the temperature went up. And a good example of that was just like 2 days ago. It was 30 degrees in the early morning, 30 degrees, and then just a couple hours later, it was 50 degrees.
Yeah, I totally get that's one thing. Totally, you know, I wasn't expecting, but the weather is definitely unpredictable. And I always tell my friends and family in Jersey that, well, this is one state, you know, I can actually – experience all four seasons in one day without, you know, any given day. So yeah, it's pretty
exactly.
crazy.
Exactly. And that's actually one of the things that I like about the state, because you never know what the weather is going to do. You never know.
I'm definitely finding that out.
Yeah, if you remember, which I'm sure you do because it wasn't that long ago, near the end of the winter, the weather was real nice. It even got up in the 80s a couple of days. And then it started getting a little bit cooler. But it stayed at that little bit cooler, like in the 60s, for quite a while. And then the very first day of spring, now it may not have happened everywhere in Ohio, but it happened in most places in Ohio, the very first, a whole bunch of snow. Just like, boom, out of nowhere.
Yeah. It's nuts. But I can't say that I don't mind it, because everything else, like I said, has been a good thing for me, the move and everything. You know, it's been a big adjustment. I do miss a lot of people. Like my job in Philly, I worked there for 12 years. So, I'm always my people there. It's like my second family. I miss them a lot. That's the hardest part, probably, because I was, so close to my coworkers and people I worked with there, that it was hard for me to, move completely to a new state where I didn't really know hardly anyone, So just a few people that live here, including you.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. If you want to, I won't say too many because we want to get talking more about you, but I can tell you about a couple places that you can visit if you want to hear them.
Yeah, tell me, because I know I have like a list of places I want to see. There were a few places I visited over the summer, but tell me which ones are on your list, and I'll tell you if they're ones I know about or not.
Yeah, you could know about them, or you may even have been, but there's the President Garfield House.
Have not.
Have you been there?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that one. No.
Yeah,
I haven't been to that one. Where's that?
Okay. As you know, there's a little bit of a whatever that messes things up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's interesting because it's, President Garfield's house, and they made it into not necessarily a museum, but it's a tourist attraction because you go in there and you get to see the house and different things from President Garfield's presidency. And it's a nice little tour, and they even, it's either in the basement or maybe it's on the first floor, because I'm pretty sure you get to go to the basement. Well, it depends. They may have changed things since when I went there. But in the basement at that time, they have a bunch of bathrooms and to where more than one person can go to the bathroom. And then they also have vending machines. And then different information about other places that you can go in Ohio. And most tourist attractions do that. Even in other states, they do that. And another thing is the Holden Arboretum.
I'm not familiar with that either.
Yeah, you may not. You can, look them up online, and then you can get the exact addresses and stuff and eventually visit them. And then there's also, and this place is really great. I've been there multiple times, and that's how great it is. It's called Penitentiary Glen. And, a lot of people think that's funny. All the word, if you look at what the word means, penitentiary, that word means rehabilitation.
Right.
It doesn't mean prison. It's called...
That's the first,
Yeah, exactly. But the reason why it's called that, Penitentiary Glen, is because they are rehabilitating animals in a natural environment. Because, there are some that have to be inside of a building for a while, like say if they're hurt bad enough or they're not good with people or whatever, they may have to stay within an enclosed environment in a part of some building. But for the most part, they're all outside, and they just ask you not to touch any of them. But you can watch them and watch what they do, and they're getting rehabilitated. And some of them are pretty bad off. Like there was one the last time I was there that and it was a goose, and it had been shot with an arrow that went through its entire body, like from the head down to the end, and it survived.
Oh boy.
But it was doing pretty bad because it was walking funny, and so as part of the tour they were seeing what happened to the poor little thing. For the most part, you don't see ones that are that bad. So if it bothers you to see stuff like that, you don't have to see it unless you go wherever it is that they have those. And they have a nice gift shop. And then another thing that they have, hopefully they still have it, and I wouldn't think they got rid of it because it was like one of the most popular things that they had there. There is a, it's obviously not the size of an actual train, but it's not like a tiny little train either. It's big enough for two people to sit together in one seat, and then the next seat, two people can sit. And it's got several cars attached to it, and there's a conductor, and he takes you around on the entire track, and you go through maybe not the whole Glen, but you go through quite a bit of the Glen, and then he points out different things of interest within the Glen. So not only do you get to see all that stuff, you get a nice train ride.
Okay, nice. So that sounds like something to do on a nice day.
Yeah. Well, they even, if they still have it, but they always did in the past, have a special things that they did at Halloween, because you would ride the train.
Oh, yeah.
And while you ride the train, it was like going through a haunted house, only it was a haunted forest.
Inventive. Yeah.
And so that's another one. I know of so many. There's also, right now I can't think of the name of it. It might be the John Smith House. I'm not sure. But it's in Kirtland. There's actually several things in Kirtland. So you might even just look it up and ask the Google attractions in Kirtland, because there's like several things there in Kirtland.
Okay.
And this one is, I think it's supposed to be the John Smith House or something. But it's just interesting because you go through there and you get to see different things. And now further south, if you go to Marietta, there's like tons of things there. There's the Becky Thatcher a showboat, where you can go in there and you can have a nice, like, formal dinner, and you can watch a show being performed. And it's on three levels, and it's an actual ship that has those different levels. You don't go out on the ship, but you go on the ship, and it's on the water when you're there, and you get the experience, you know, a nice experience. And
that could be dangerous for me, because I love ships and boats, and I would definitely get ideas for some guerrilla filmmaking if I went there.
Well, some of these places, you know, you would just have to ask. But a lot of these places, within any state, you could ask them, hey, could I film? I'm a filmmaker. Because they would ask for, usually, as you know, since you're a filmmaker, well, as long as you give us credit, yeah, we don't care. Go ahead.
Right, and I've done that before. I was just kind of joking because, you know, I'm crazy about my boats and my ships, and that's like, yeah, I'm very, as you know, I'm very nautical. So.
Oh, I know. Well, that's one.
My wheels will be spinning.
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons why I brought that one up specifically.
Right.
And then I'll just mention one other one in Marietta. That's it's called the Putnam House, and the reason why it's called Putnam House is because a man named Putnam, it's the house that he built, and it was when he was one of the first ones to come over from, you know, England. I mean, not England, but whatever, you know, to move to Marietta is what I meant to say. So when he got there, he built this house, and so it's called the Putnam House. But the house itself is not really a house per se, although it is, but it's a museum, in that you go around and you get to see what the house actually looked like. And they still, they had to renovate it somewhat, but you still get to see, and they'll point them out to you even, some of the original wood nails that were used to make the house.
Oh, okay.
And the beds, and you may or may not know this. I knew this before I went in there, but they explain it to you when you go through the thing that the way they used to make beds, you had to sit up in the bed. You didn't lay down flat like people do now. So the beds were short. Even for tall people, they were always short. And so they have to show how they used to, quote unquote, lay in the bed. They would have like 20 pillows propped up so that they could sit up in the bed and then they'd sleep that way. And see, to me, that's not odd because I have to sleep that way because of my asthma, because I can't breathe if I lay flat.
Yeah. For somebody like me, I would never sleep again because my long leg would be hanging on the floor.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, you definitely want to check out that Becky Thatcher. So now I'll segue because I helped it get to the 30-minute mark. So you should have had your voice saved a little bit.
I think I'm good.
Okay, good. Then now you'll do most of the talking because I'm tired of talking, but for the most part.
All right.
But what I
just ask
to say
me whatever
now,
you want to ask. Sure.
To segue, since we were talking about the ship, because it's not a boat, and you know somebody who that's their living, they will tell you this is not a boat, it's a ship. So Becky Thatcher, Becky Thatcher is a ship. It's not a boat.
Okay.
But because
it's a
because we were talking about nautical things, I want you to tell the people about your, and I know that you wouldn't say this about yourself, but your amazing underwater photography that you do.
Oh. Yeah, well, thank you for mentioning that. That was always a passion of mine, scuba diving. It wasn't until, you know, later in the 90s when I became a filmmaker that I got the idea of pairing the two things I love most, movie making and scuba diving, which, of course, as you know, led to Deep Undead, which was a massive production for me. So that's kind of how that became possible. But I spent many years of diving and acquiring experience diving shipwrecks and learning underwater photography, you know, with a 35-millimeter camera and then eventually with a video, with a camcorder and a specialized housing before I was prepped to even attempt anything like Deep Undead. I did a lot of testing, you know, just a lot of going under the water testing with the cameras and seeing what worked, what didn't work. So a lot of pre-production, probably at least a year or two, went in before I even started, like, production on Deep Undead for that reason, just, you know, the technicality of shooting underwater and lighting underwater, of course, is always a big problem. But I was always passionate about photography, but I knew from a very early age I wanted to be a scuba diver and, you know, in hopes of someday making a movie. And then just being able to mesh those two things together, those two passions of mine, was just, you know, a dream come true. So there it is.
Yeah. Well, that's always good when you can do something that's your dream. I just want to say to the listeners, and of course this is very subjective, but check out Deep Undead because there's a lot to like about it. But I did want to say, since we're talking about underwater photography, that alone in the movie is worth watching it for. And that's not saying that it's a bad movie, because it's not. But that alone is worth watching that movie for. That's how great the underwater photography is. And
I really appreciate that.
Oh, that's okay. Because it's true. I mean, so now Cinema Wasteland.
Yeah, so I was just out there for the first time this past weekend. I only went out for the day because I had some other things that I was doing over the weekend with my family. But I did get out there on the last day, but it was so much fun. I got to meet so many people in person for the first time, people that I have known and that I have, you know, either worked with or was friends with on Facebook, like particularly Joel Weinkoop and his wife Kathy. I met them in person for the first time. For the first time after knowing them for so many years, this was incredible seeing them face to face. And they worked on, you know, the Blue Hole, which I'm sure we'll be talking about. So it just was really a surreal experience meeting them after all these years, of after, you know, indirectly working with them before on different projects, you know.
Oh, yeah, and they're great.
They're
great,
they're awesome,
people,
awesome.
And they're great filmmakers.
Yeah, and it was just fun just to hang out with them, you know, and just face-to-face and talk. You know, just, we just had a good old time talking about the movies and about everything, you know, over the years. And then I got to see other people that I had not seen in many, many years, like James L. Edwards, who was there with J.R. Bookwalter, and that was wonderful to see him again. I got to see J.R. again. We were together at VHS Fest back in 2018, so it was great seeing him again. And Matt from Future Video, one of the distributors that I'm friends with, you know, who also is in this, like, general area that we're in. We actually, you kind of talked a little bit about the movies at VHS Fest and about my move here and everything. So we're thinking possibly of doing something together in the future, you know. I don't really want to say too much now because nothing's like, you know, we didn't talk about anything specifically, but definitely there's some possibilities there that we might be doing some work together in the future.
Nice.
Who else? I got to meet Debbie Rashan for the first time in person, which that was incredible. She was great. Yeah, definitely great experience. I got to meet Maddie Deering from Pittsburgh. She was there. First time I met her in person. Tim Gross from Grossfest in Pittsburgh, who runs the show there.
Mm-hmm.
Got to meet him. And I hope I'm not forgetting. I'm sure there are other people there. Just so many great people. I had a blast. It was so much fun. Just, you know, I looked around, the vendors, of course, I thought maybe I would pick up something, but I was just so busy, like, interacting with all these people I had not seen in years, or, you know, saw some old friends and made some new ones, you know, at the same time.
Very nice. So you had a great time.
Yes. I did. It was really awesome.
And not that I'm trying to rush you or anything. I am giving you a chance. Did you want to say anything else about Cinema Wasteland?
Just that it's a really great show for independent filmmakers, really catering to the shot on video crowd. So I definitely recommend it for people who are fans of, like, VHS Fest. I noticed a lot of the same people were at this festival. So, and I think pretty much that's what Grossfest is like as well. And I'm really, really looking forward to the next show because I'm planning on doing VHS Fest, which is in July, and then Grossfest is in August. So it's definitely a big year for doing festivals for me. And I'm really looking forward to both those shows too.
Oh, well, good.
And that's about it.
Okay. Yeah, I just didn't want to jump into something else if there was something else you wanted to say. So I'm glad I asked. So since you already mentioned the Blue Hole, you might as well go ahead and talk about it now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell us whatever you can tell us.
All right. So the Blue Hole is actually loosely an anthology. It started out as being like a traditional anthology, basically with three separate stories. I kind of wanted to do something a little bit different. So the wraparound story I had in mind was actually the Blue Hole, and that's kind of where the Blue Hole came into the story. But I really, because I knew I was going to be leaving South Jersey, I always dreamed of making a movie in the Pinelands in New Jersey, and the Blue Hole was kind of my opportunity. So, you know, I just kind of got this wild idea to mesh all three stories and then interconnect them and have the wraparound story become the main story. So the two other shorts in the movie kind of took more of a back seat and kind of are presented in a way as flashbacks to the main story without giving too much away. Mm-hmm. It's just, I want to call it a unique approach to an anthology, something, you know, untraditional, I guess you could say. So for people who like the anthologies, this might be like a little bit different. But yeah, they could easily still be three separate stories for sure, but they're all connected in ways that I can't really mention. But yeah, so the two shorts that I would say are older shorts that we did back in the 90s, which is so unique, I guess, because you get to flash back to the 90s and you flash forward to the present time where the Blue Hole takes place, because that takes place in the present. See, the other two stories are presented mainly as flashbacks, but they definitely connect to the main story. And I will say that the two other, what's interesting about the two other shorts from the 90s, well, actually one was in the 90s and one was like the early 2000s, basically, but they were produced separately as custom videos. So they were really distributed hardly at all, you know, so it's going to be like many people are going to be seeing these shorts for the very first time. So I kind of was looking for two shorts that I was, you know, that I really liked, that I wanted to do something with. And this is kind of the idea I came up with, to have a third story and make it an anthology. But then, like I said, it just got, you know, I just kind of wanted to do more with it than just having three separate shorts interconnected by just like a little wraparound. I wanted to do more with it. So I guess I shouldn't say too much about the movie other than the Blue Hole is pretty much like it sounds. There is a body of water called the Blue Hole in southern New Jersey. It actually was about 20 minutes from my home in New Jersey that was very legendary. And if you're into folklore, the Jersey Devil had a lot of, sightings in that area. So the Blue Hole was also known as the bathing grounds for the bathing pond, if you say pond, of the Jersey Devil. So that's basically, you know, a lot of the legend in the area. That's kind of where that story evolved from. So we kind of took it a couple steps further than that. But there's a lot of mystery. And, you know, like I said, without saying too much, it's pretty much horror, mystery, horror, that type of thing. I have a great cast involved, you know, and some great people, many, many talented people. So I'm real, real lucky and happy to have everybody on board.
Well, good. I mean, when you get closer to it, you might want to come back on and give more details once it's closer to being able to come out, whether it be on DVD or streaming or whatever.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you said that. We're very close, actually. It's in the final stages of post-production. Matt Cannon actually is doing the score for it. He is pretty much finished with the score, and Matt Wallner, who actually directed some of the scenes with me, he also edited the movie, and he did a lot of the cinematography. So, you know, it's in the final stages. So we're looking at probably a release date for like May, probably by the end of May. But it is going to screen at Grossfest. I know that for sure. A couple other festivals we're trying to get in. But that's like the one that I'm locked in for in August. So if no one gets to see it before Grossfest, they will get to see it at Grossfest in Pittsburgh if they're in that area. We also have a distribution deal pending as well. So it's very near, you know, very near its release. I just can't give an exact date because I don't have like the actual, you know, finished master in my possession yet.
Oh, yeah, I understand that.
But yeah, I'm really excited about it. It's my first feature in like 20-some years that I actually did, you know, since, you know, Sharky Video was doing all these videos in the 90s, and pretty much after Deep Undead, we just stopped. This is my first one since Deep Undead.
Yeah, that has been a little bit of a while. But it'll be worth it because you make good movies. And now me, I'm an anthology lover. I love anthologies of all different kinds, and especially if they're a little bit out of the ordinary. But that's true of me with actually any movie. Like, even if I'm watching a comedy, I like it if it's a little bit out of the ordinary, like if there's something weird about it or something. Well, because you know what I mean. It's like you get tired of just seeing the same thing over and over just with different names in it.
Right. No, I get you. Anthologies are really popular. Everybody loves them, you know?
Well, like I said to one guest, and it's not an insult to anybody, one really great thing about watching an anthology, if one is kind of boring to you, you're not going to be bored for that long. And so it's completely different than if you're watching a two-hour movie and it's boring and you're going to be bored for 2 hours. That's a lot different than being bored for, 15, 20 minutes.
Right, exactly. No, because, maybe there's one anthology that you might not like as much and you might get bored with, but then there's another one that you might really like a lot and are excited about.
Exactly.
So, I can totally relate to that.
Yeah, and I had told this other guest, I just watched one of those kinds of movies not that long ago. It was over 2 hours long, and it was so boring that I had to turn it off and go back to it because it was a little bit interesting, but they were taking a really, 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 really long time to get to the point. And so I kept turning it off and going back to it. Like, and I had to do that at least 10 times before I finally finished the movie.
I get it. Some are like that. I can totally understand that. I've done that, for my share of them as well.
Most people have, I think. Some people just go ahead and turn them off and never watch them. I mean, there have been a couple that I did that with, but it had less to do with being bored than it did with, now, you may or may not know this about me, I don't care about blood and guts. I've watched some of the bloodiest, goriest things that have ever been made. But if it's just all blood and gore with no story, to me, there's no point. Just like if your movie is just nudity and with no story, then it's not a movie. It's not worth my time to watch it. Even if it's loaded with naked guys. I mean, if that's all it is, got naked guys in it with no story, I could watch a porn movie with naked guys. What do I got to watch your movie for if that's all it is?
You can't look at it so much. No, I know what you're saying. I know what you mean, though. You can't look at something, for so long without a story. Just look at something, no matter how good it might look to you, you're going to get bored with it after a certain amount of time. So.
Exactly. And that's my, part of my point. There's this one movie, I won't say what the name of it is, because I don't want to trash them, because I didn't watch the whole movie, so I don't know how it ended, but it was about stigmata, and this killer guy, he had this stigmata fixation, and so, now the first time he did it, it was not okay, but it was okay as far as watching it. He stuck something in their side. He had, and it was always women, of course, and he had this woman tied down, and he stuck her in the side, and then he nailed her each hand and each foot, and they spent a lot of time on that, too. So it wasn't even they just show it, and it was a little bit too much just for the one time. Then they did it a second time, and then they did it a third time. And then they spent a lot of time on it about him pounding the nails in and sticking the thing in the side, moving it around. Yeah, and they spent a lot of time on that each time. And by the time they got to the fourth time, because I said, I'll watch one more instance of him killing somebody to see if he's going to do anything different. And no, he didn't. He did the, I should say the third time, not the fourth time. He didn't do anything different. He did it exactly the same. They spent the same amount of time. And then when it came back to he was starting to do it again for the fourth time, that's when I turned it off and I didn't finish watching it. Because to me was pointless. It was pointless and totally unnecessary. And I've watched things like, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre and even grosser things than that. I mean, I've seen people's heads blow up.
Yeah, I just think I think when the violence is suggested, I think it's more entertaining than that's like, I guess, what you would call torture porn, seeing that over and over again, the same thing.
Yeah, the same thing.
Yeah.
That's what I would call it.
Yeah, I couldn't. I don't personally, that's not something. I know there are people that like that, but I'm not one of them. So, yeah, I'm not somebody that could sit through something like that, honestly.
Yeah, me either.
Yeah, I definitely like a little bit of substance.
Yeah. Now, putting that aside for the moment or, you know, for the rest of the show, because we are down to 13 minutes, but you probably won't talk that long about the other two things that you wanted to go over. So you have some upcoming screenings at different fests. And so, so you have 13 minutes, so go ahead.
Okay, so I mentioned Gross Fest. That's going to be the first weekend in August, August 2nd and 3rd. It's two nights in Pittsburgh, so we are planning a screen of The Blue Hole. It's probably going to be the first public screening that we will have of the movie that's going to be at Gross Fest. And I know that I'm going to be there. Matt Cannon, the composer, is going to be there. He's got his own vending table, I believe, so he's going to be selling his, you know, his music and some of his movies. And also, Amanda Megan, who is one of the stars in the movie, is going to be joining us as well, so I'm real excited about that. Maybe some more, we're not sure yet, but there might be a couple other surprises, you know, people from the cast that might stop by. So I do, while I'm talking about the cast, I do want to mention, you know, Joel Weinkoop and Kathy Weinkoop are both in the movie. Michelle Gibbs is another one. She has a starring role in it. This is her second or third movie she's worked with Matt Cannon. And it's worth mentioning that Michelle, Matt Cannon, and Amanda and myself all worked on Matt's movie Open House. I don't know if you ever saw that short, but that's how I met Michelle and Amanda and got them, you know, for The Blue Hole. So it was kind of nice, you know, getting to work, you know, with, you know, a lot of the same group on that movie, and that was a lot of fun. If you ever get a chance, I don't think you have the Blu-ray of Deep Undead, but I actually included it on as a special feature on Deep Undead, the Blu-ray that was released through Saturn's Core and Vinegar Syndrome. But that's a special feature. Open House is included. It's also included on Phil Herman's Horror Tales 666 Part 2. I want to say it's Part 2. I know he has, like, I think 3 or 4 of them now. I want to say it's Part 2, but I can't remember if it's Part 2 or 3. But Open House is also on that, you know, Horror Tales as part of the anthology. So I just thought that was worth mentioning. So you did see it.
Yeah, sorry I interrupted. But yeah.
No, I'm glad you saw it. I was wondering. awesome. So I hope you enjoyed it. I actually had so much fun working on that, and I hope Matt someday gets to make a feature of his own, but this, you know, was such a great experience and very professional, and everybody was just so, you know, so much fun to work with. And, I'm just really impressed. And then we have Jacob Kane. I think this is his first movie, if I'm not mistaken. He's in the cast as well. Laura Giglio from The Ex-Hooker's Christmas is in it. She also directed one of the shorts in the movie that we did way back when. And I don't want to forget anybody. Debbie D, who I think has been on your show. Most of these people, have either been on your show or you've seen them in something.
Yeah, I know most of the people that you've mentioned.
Yeah,
if not all.
Yeah, so, and Amanda, you know, she's actually a director as well. She actually just got done a movie called Anarchy. I don't know if you've heard of that one yet, but it just came out. So she's very proud of her. She actually, I think, just had a big screening of it. So, you know, very talented cast that, you know, as you know, Joel, he's been, you know, doing these movies for so long. So I was very lucky to get him in. Kathy Booth.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of Phil Hermann, of course. He's one of the stars, too. Phil Hermann is like got a big part in it. And yeah, Phil and I, you know, he was on the show with us. I think the last time he came on and you know, talked with us about the movie.
He has
a real big part in it. And yeah, so it was fun. Yeah, we had such a fun time meeting in person. That was the first time I met him in person after working with him so many times over like the 30 plus years of doing all these crazy movies. Yeah, that was just so much fun working with him in person. It was just really, really wonderful. So, yeah, so I hope I'm not forgetting anyone, but that's pretty much the cast. You know, of course, Dawn Murphy, who played Backwoods Marcy, is also in one of the shorts. I should say that, too. So we have other people that probably have not done any other movies. I'm not sure if you would know their names, but there is a supporting cast as well. But those are all the main people, you know, that you probably already are familiar with that are in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I'm just real, real excited. Can't wait to see it. You know, I've only seen a rough cut so far, so I actually haven't seen, like, anything that these guys have been working on for, like, the past year for editing the movie and everything and the music and all that. I just had a little bit, you know. I didn't really want to see any more than that because I kind of want to be surprised and I want to, you know, hopefully see it for the first time with everybody else, you know. So we're looking forward to the screening. And then possibly Puff Film Festival in Philadelphia, we're trying to get it in for that as well, which will be late in the summer.
Okay.
So, is there more time, or
that
pretty much
great.
It? Okay, cool.
You did say that's pretty much it, right?
Because
the sound cut out there
much,
for a second.
Festival. Oh, yeah, so I wasn't sure if we still had time or not, but yeah, so I'm just real excited about getting this released and moving on to the next project.
Oh, yeah, I'm interested in everything you got coming up because you never disappoint. We got like 6 minutes left, so you had a future feature that you at least wanted to say a little bit about?
Yeah, so I have a couple things. I have one thing, and it's another anthology of some of old Sharky Video's old shorts we're going to be releasing soon, probably this summer. That's going to be for VHS Fest. I don't want to say a lot about it because I know that, you know, my friend who's working on it, you know, always likes the element of surprise, but that's coming. Right. They're all movies that were done in the 90s, you know, when we were doing these shot on videos, pretty much, you know, knocking them out like crazy. So that's going to be coming up probably next. And then I'm writing a new feature, which is kind of a science fiction horror type feature. You know, I'm still working on the screenplay for that, but that's something will probably be my first movie that I actually make here in Ohio. So I'm kind of enlisting people to help with that. I've already talked to a few people who are interested. But I don't want to say too much about it other than think what to compare it to. Have you ever seen the movie The Fourth Kind, which is based on a true story? Let me ask you if you've seen that. So it has some elements of that. It has some elements of Rosemary's Baby, and it has some elements of some other movies. So just to give you a little loose idea of, but just that's kind of all I really want to say about it at this point. But got a lot of people interested in it, and you know, I've spoken to some other fellow Ohioans here about possibly working on it. So So that's pretty much it for upcoming projects. I'm just excited to get the Blue Hole out there, you know, and, you know, moving on to the next one. That's going to be my next thing would be this new feature we're working on.
Well, of course, you get plenty of good vibes in it from me because I send those out to you because
absolutely.
I'm pretty sure that let me put it this way. I know I'm not going to dislike them because I've never been disappointed in any movie that you've made. And,
I know there's some bad ones out there, but I appreciate you being kind.
Well, I'm not just saying that because you're on my show, because I wanted to point out quickly that I'm like mm-hmm. what my brother is for the most part about watching movies. They can be a bad movie, but as long as you can get some kind of entertainment out of it, then that's fine, even if they're like a poorly made movie. Now, some of the movies, though, that I've seen and yours have never been this kind, but I've seen some that were so bad, and I knew they weren't supposed to be funny, but I was laughing at them because they were so poorly done. But at least I got some enjoyment out of them, so why would I bash it?
Right.
Because I got
enjoyment
out of
it. Right. I mean, hey, you're getting entertained. Yeah, I mean, you're
exactly.
still getting entertained by that movie, no matter how bad it is. You know, if you're laughing, you're getting entertained. That's the way I look at it.
Well, yeah, me too. So we're you, me, and my brother are about the same. Well, like, and this is one that's always talked about when you talk about bad movies, and it's really not all that bad. The Plan 9 from Outer Space. But
hear about that a lot. Yeah,
it is pretty horrible. And what's funny is it's just so poorly done, and how, and some of it you don't even see anymore because they cut those parts out when they reissued it, but I mean, granted, I didn't see the original because I wasn't around when they put the original out. But but when I saw the original one, or close to the original, when it was on VHS, and we were watching that, and I mean, this is how bad it was done. They were in a graveyard, okay, and because that's supposed to be scary. And the guy trips over a headstone, and the headstone bends because it's cardboard.
Wow.
And they left that in the movie. okay. And then so most of the time I was just laughing because it was so poorly done. I was like, oh, yeah, okay. But at least
sure.
it's funny. So that doesn't make it bad necessarily.
No.
Because as long as it's
not
funny.
Not at all. I actually love when people laugh at something, a movie I either made or was in, for something that was unintentionally funny, that I get a big kick out of. So, and I'm usually laughing along with them.
Well, yeah, most of the people, they know, they realize that, well, okay, they did make a little bit of a mistake. But I also take that into consideration, like if I'm doing a review for something, I take it into consideration if it's their first movie or if they did it in, like, you know, a week or something, and that's what they came up with. There's all kinds of things I take into consideration, like including money. But I just got a little warning there on my side of the phone conversation that I know nobody else can hear. But I just got a warning that we're down to, like, 45 seconds. So is there anything you want to say in those last 45 seconds?
Just that I'm really proud of the people I've been working with and just had the pleasure of working with on the Blue Hole, and, you know, and people I'll continue to work with in the future. They're real happy, very lucky to have Matt Lawner, Matt Cannon, you know, doing the post-production work. They just have done such an incredible job, and I'm really, really anxious for everybody to see what they did with it, and just real super proud of the cast, and I can't wait.
Okay, cool. And sorry I am cutting you off here, but I have to because the show is going to end in like 2 seconds. So thank you very much for being on the show again, Dave. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It's been so much fun, Mac. Anytime.
Thanks. Yeah, good night.
Have a good night. Take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.